What a crazy day, a long day, although all the days here are pretty long, normally because they follow through into the next day due to long waits, checkpoints, large distances to travel, and very occasionally even crossing an official border or two, kind of zigzagging across the Turkish-Syrian border depending on what's happening where is... It's pretty amazing, really, because you get to see an insane contrast. I'm now back in Turkey, and it's kind of strange looking out of the window and just seeing a road which is paved with curbs and shops with stuff in. Shops that aren't made out of tarpaulins. I'm sat on my bed, which is very comfortable, and I'm feeling extremely lucky. Due to the shelling and not really wanting to spend a night over in Syria, it wasn't, you know, part of the plan to get in any overly dangerous situations. I said on Twitter that we're taking way more precautions than we are risks. We crossed over from Syria last night into Turkey, and I've got some conversations captured where there's large booms in the background, and initially I'm thinking that's really weird. There's thunder in the air and there's no clouds, or not even really any weather to speak of. And then I'm told, speed up, that's mortar fire. And it's probably only a couple of miles behind us, so it was the right thing to do, obviously. You can't help but be brought straight back to reality and reminded that it doesn't matter how beautiful the country is that you're driving through, and between kind of quite intense scenes, whether it be a hospital you're visiting and there's the injured right there in front of you, or refugee camps where people are just trying to find the very basics to survive, but the countryside is just doing what countryside does, and then suddenly you're reminded there's a war. Today, there was issues at the border to get in, because last week, there was a car bomb, and they just totally clamped down the border and didn't allow traffic to cross. And the security was so strict that they weren't letting Westerners in as such, or at least people who were didn't have any real official business. So we kind of teamed up with an organisation outside of the Hayat convoy group, who've the ones that have been looking after us, making sure we're safe, and pointing us to where their aid gets delivered around northern Syria. And they managed to get us in. And it was a strange border crossing, a really weird border crossing, where we were just driving through to a certain point, then we'd get out of the car and we'd walk to another car and we'd drive a bit further, and then papers were shown. Our papers weren't shown. I didn't need to produce my passport at any point. And then I realised we're actually illegally crossing into Syria, and illegally crossing into Syria was not necessarily something I planned on doing at the beginning of the trip, but that's what was happening. And once you're in, you're thinking, you know, I really need to get out the same way, because you can't get back into a country you've exited and not got an exit stamp. But it was deemed important that a very small number of people, and there was just a couple of people selected. I was selected due to some of the images that I captured, and the fact that things that I'm sharing are being shared online, and there is a certain amount of awareness. being generated around the Hayek convoy and just the issues going on here. So I was pointed to and told, come with us. And the first port of call was Ramytown, which occasionally, also I'm told, is still under attack, and an incredible school, a really amazing school that we saw first of all. I did do a recording and upload from there. The refugee camp itself on the hill behind with 7,000 people, that was a little bit of a shock to the system after seeing a refugee camp on the Turkish side, a really quite well-organised and decent refugee camp on the Turkish side, and suddenly you're thrown into this and 7,000 people, and if they're lucky they can source enough food for 5,000, which is an incredible feat in itself, and yet so many other threats, mainly due to sanitation, as with most refugee camps, to just so difficult to keep everything clean when people are just living on top of each other and there's only canvas separating families from the elements. I thought that was bad, and it was kind of interesting talking to a couple of the Free Syrian Army, and there was a moment when I felt a little bit uncomfortable due to some news of something that had happened in the area that I'm kind of not at liberty to share just yet. I'm checking to see if it's true, but I just didn't really want to be there, and I just thought, okay, I would like to be either back in Turkey or ideally home right now. I was genuinely quite scared, and I thought this might have been kind of a visit, a trip too far. But there was a sudden and urgent ushering into the vehicle, and we were off to the next place, which was the Atma camp. And that just completely blew my mind. It's kind of hard to talk about seeing something for real that you've only ever experienced on the television. My experience of refugees before are quite a desperate people, normally strewn around a city, given pretty squalid living conditions and refused papers to move freely, but they have a roof over their head quite a lot of the time, and sometimes they might even have a heater and enough of the basic essentials. Nothing like this, though. You drive up a long, winding, and some may say kind of beautiful, almost Grecian mountain pass. It's actually, I guess, hilly, you'd say, into kind of a sparsely wooded, dusty area. And you kind of see the litter and the rubbish strewn initially, and a lot of it's kind of plastic, which is blown from loose lean-tos and tarps and shelters built from, you know, anything. And there might be just a naked kid. A naked child just kind of standing there, staring at you. You're in kind of a squat minibus pulling in, feeling a little bit like a perverted tourist wanting to see, you know, the most depressing places in the area, and then hitting the jackpot because this was the most depressing place in the area. In fact, it's known to be the worst refugee camp in all of Syria. 23,000 people. 23,000 people. Many which kind of know each other, because the refugee camp initially started with a few people trying to make for the Turkish border, and then getting stuck at the border because Turkey wasn't letting any others in, and then more people would join them, and more people would join them, and then families would join them, and families of families, and so many connections, and this city is born, and it's kind of crazy because they don't have the infrastructure for this. There's a kind of a weird dirt track high street going up the hill where the tents aren't necessarily for just living in. People live in them, but there might be a small bench made of bricks and scrap wood with something on to sell. So it's effectively a high street of shops, but shops used in the loosest of terms. People just desperately trying to trade or sell something so that they can feed their family. I need to mention as well that, you know, the moment we stepped over this particular part of Syria, people rush up to you and they're desperate for help and assistance. I've not experienced that since some of the most poverty-stricken areas of India or Africa, and a kid had his hand in my bag trying to grab something, and what could I say? You know, you have nothing. I'm walking in like a Christmas tree, dangling goodies, and you'd be a fool not to try and take something from me. You're hungry, really hungry. And I had this kind of power bar on me that I handed over to a kid at one point, and there's almost a fight over it. And I've seen that when I was traveling India, but for some reason it hit me harder this time. This is very real, because these people have escaped conflict and death all over the place, escape the war, only to find themselves in a situation where they may still die from disease, from famine, or from one case that I heard from the Atma camp, where a candle was knocked over in a tent and 7 children died from one family. The tent, because most of the stuff's made of plastic and synthetic tarpaulins, just went up in 6 seconds, and they had no chance at all to flee from the horrors of war, only to find yourself in such a precarious situation that, you know, from day to day you can't necessarily feed yourself, and then you may die of a disease due to poor sanitation, or who knows, starvation, burning to death in a tent. I feel very lucky to be where I am right now, and I don't know if I feel lucky to have been able to witness the things that have been going on in Syria. I know I've not even scraped the surface, but I also don't know what to do about it. Sharing these stories is a very small thing if it doesn't make people do something, act in some way. And yet I guess money does make a difference, because I witnessed and experienced a convoy of vehicles from the Hayat convoy go in with medical supplies, with beds, with food. I saw a storeroom today with supplies waiting to go out to the right people. So stuff is definitely being done. It's just how to build on that. It's quite intense. I've got a lot of photos and things to kind of compile and write in a more long form manner. There's so many things I couldn't share in real time due to it, huge security issues. Just tweeting roughly a location or sharing a photograph that might be recognised could call an airstrike in. So, apologise for rambling. It's in the early hours of the morning. The windows open in the hotel room as I try to stay cool. And I'm thinking about those people who are probably cold, sleeping on the dirt, not far away from here.